is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint, the Midweek Report.
Welcome to Viewpoint, the Midweek Report, election coverage. This is Malcolm Out Loud. President Donald Trump wakes up this morning to a new reality, an exceedingly hostile Washington, D.C. The U.S. government is now split. The House is Democratic. The Senate and White House are Republican. And with that comes a dynamic that Trump has not yet confronted, a Chamber of Commerce that is looking to destroy and defeat him. Now, subpoenas will be flying, investigative hearings will happen on the regular, the news media will need to shift its focus. If the White House has an idea, it will almost always get shot down by the Democratic leadership. The Democratic House of Representatives will be looking to hold Trump's administration's feet to the fire, and is sure to drag his cabinet to Capitol Hill multiple times each month to answer a slew of questions about its behavior, past and present. Well, that was the dim report from Politico Reports, John Brushnan and Rachel Bade. I thought I'd share that with you up front. There'll be a lot of commentary and thoughts in the hours and days ahead, friends, but it is interesting. Now, the president comes back with a tweet already. I mean, they're flying today, clearly, and I love this. If the Democrats think they're going to waste taxpayer money investigating us at the House level, then we will likewise be forced to consider investigating them for all the leaks of classified information and much else at the Senate level. Two can play that game. It's going to be an interesting couple of years, friends. Joining us here on the show today, Colonel Jim Warshuk is here. He's retired from United States Air Force, a Korean Senior Intelligence and Special Missions Officer, served as Deputy Director for Intelligence for U.S. Central Command, and has worked on the White House National Security Council. Also joining us, Ava Armstrong, a political commentator, radio personality, and producer here at America Out Loud. Ava is an author as well. You'll find her on Amazon. And listen, and of course, both Ava and Jim are political analysts and follow this stuff like religion. So let's get started here, guys. And all right, so I read you, Colonel Jim, I read you the opening, the opening bell here from Politico. I thought was interesting. From a perspective, at least. Of course, the president is just getting fired up back and forth. So what's your take on that opening bell from Politico? What's your sense of that? Let's start there.
Well, it reads as a headline that the Democrats want to hear, being that it's a left-leaning liberal magazine, and that is the opening round that they wanted. I can assure you, from Donald Trump and my analysis of what he's done going into this election, he no doubt analyzed both sides, whether he won the House or lost the House. He was going to have a strategy to go forward with that, and I have no doubt he will. I'm sure he has already set a course, saying just as that piece said, they're going to do things, and he's going to do things, and he's responded with a flurry of tweets this morning to, you know, level the playing field, so to speak, to say you're not getting anything, and he will work closely with his Senate to ensure anything that the Democrat-led House puts forward won't go anywhere. I mean, we watched this with the Democrats where they left things on the Senate floor. Well, I can assure you, this Senate will leave things on the Senate floor and they won't go forward.
Jim, that is, really interesting you say, and I like where you start about the strategy. I think that's something to really consider for everybody today. You have to remember this president is a very strategic president. It's his natural instinct to do that. You're exactly right. They're either going to play well and come together. Now, Pelosi comes out and she, starts talking and all the usual stuff she starts saying. And but, you know, I mean, you can't believe anything she says, because who they're going to stack up into those committees are, these are all drooling. They're like salivating over going after the president, clearly. But if they waste the next couple of years on that, I think the American people will probably speak very loudly in 2020. What say you?
Well, I think we haven't much of a change, really. I'm pretty surprised at the reaction, the initial reaction coming from the Republicans and conservatives, because how's this different? Tell me. We had never Trumpers in the House mm-hmm. before, and now we have Democrats. So, I mean, what's the difference? There really isn't a hell of a lot of difference. So yeah. Down the road, you have to realize that the Senate, we've added to the Senate, and the Senate and President Trump together will be a firewall. So there will be nothing that will go through that President Trump does not want.
Right. That's good. The firewall is right. You're exactly right.
And you have to understand our government and how it's designed. It was designed to work this way. Mm-hmm. I know that sounds crazy, but the founders actually looked at these scenarios mm-hmm. and they set it up this way. There's nothing wrong.
All right, let's pick up on that, what you say right there. Why you talk about the founders. Ava, why do Americans like divided government?
Well, it's this discourse and the arguing and the, you know, all of this, the roiling and the, you know, all people wanting their opinions heard. This is what a representative republic is all about. It's all about debate. It's all about issues. It's all about what direction you're going to go in. It's, you know, we're made to have this fight over and over and over again. And if people don't have the stomach for it, then they shouldn't live in a representative republic, which happens to be the freest place on the planet. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this is, you know, freedom is not something that right. is just handed to you. This is something that you fight for over and over and over and over again mm-hmm. throughout the history of the country.
Right.
I mean, 242 years, we've been doing the same thing. There have been, you know, times in our history that have been more, you know, roiled up and you know, agitated,
right, sure.
but this is what we're meant to do. Now, hopefully we can do it without having violence, having, you know, people having angry confrontations, mm-hmm. but know that we're built to be having angry confrontations too, because okay. people get heated, you know.
All right, I love what you say here, because so, what you're saying here is really a good conversation for the morning after, Ava, you know. I mean,
and I'm going to say one more positive thing. I have to just cap
wow.
it with this, okay? Trump knew what he was doing,
mm-hmm.
okay? The number two issue was immigration. Trump's instinct was correct on that, okay? Mm-hmm. Everybody that Trump went out and rallied for pulled through. So Trump strategically knew what he was doing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Interesting, yeah. We're going to be talking a lot about that today on the show, the immigration versus the economy, and then the healthcare factor as well. Colonel Warshak, what to you is the biggest surprise of the midterm election the day after now? What's the biggest aha moment to you?
The other critical thing that Trump did was he had to pave the way for 2020 for him to get reelected. And he did that in some critical states. He did it in Ohio. He got rid of John Kasich, who was his opponent there. And he put in a solid Republican who supports him in Ohio. He did it in Florida with Ron DeSantis and added on another Republican senator. And what most people don't realize, Ron DeSantis will get his cabinet in Florida that he needed, because all of those members, the attorney general, the ag commissioner, and the CFO, all were solid Republicans behind Trump. And so Trump is going to have a strong Florida and his way to go, and he needs Florida for 2020. The other biggest thing that I really did not think the Republicans would lose the House. Granted, if you look back over the last 2 years, a lot of Republicans, I think it was about 40, resigned from the House, and that's right. what created the situation that we have. But I didn't expect it. I didn't expect the Democrats to get as many gains there. But as Ava said, between Trump and the Senate, he now has a firewall to block any nonsense that they try.
You know, Jim, what you say right there now, what we're really saying is it really is Trump all day, 24/7, because you just laid it out really well there. You know, we talk about the firewall, what Ava's talking about, but, you know, really, he put it all on the line on this midterm election, and people came and voted accordingly. I mean, you can't talk about politics today and talk about any part of politics without talking about Trump. Trump is the factor. He is the one in the room that's running this entire nab. I mean, he really has taken over Washington, D.C., don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. 24/7, he is going to be, as we've said before, either it's going to be positive on things that he gets signed and laws and everything that gets set, or even the negative. You know, he is, you know, they've called him, he's a showman. He's right. A showman from the standpoint that he understands the media cycle. He understands that as long as my name dominates, keyword, dominates the discussion in all the news cycles, mm-hmm. his name has to be in there, and it is, and it has been, and he's going to continue to
do
that.
Well, that's exactly right, because here we are. I mentioned already that first tweet early, but here's another one. Listen to this, Ava. This is interesting, you guys. So he comes out with another one. You talk about owning the media, Jim. You talk about the strategy behind all this. Listen to this one. In all fairness, Nancy Pelosi deserves to be chosen Speaker of the House by the Democrats. If they give her a hard time, perhaps we will add some Republican votes. She has earned this great honor. Ava, you can't make this stuff up. That's a real tweet from the president.
Oh, I read that tweet, and I'm very proud of him for saying that, because he's actually giving a nod to her for her seniority, for her leadership in the past. And I think Trump is kind of giving an olive branch to Nancy.
So you think that's a sincere tweet? You think that's a sincere tweet?
You don't understand Donald Trump if you don't think that's sincere. He has the biggest heart in the world. If you want to sit down with him and work something out, let me tell you right now, he will listen, okay? He will listen.
I got to ask Jim. Hold on a minute here. Colonel, you don't think that, and I even think that tweet is sincere. I don't think for 1 minute that tweet is sincere. I think that's total sarcasm. Do you think it's sincere?
I think it's strategic.
You bet. There it is. It's strategic. It is not sincere. It's strategic sarcasm.
Every tweet Donald Trump puts out is strategic.
That's right. That's right. He's not being sincere there. He's throwing pie in their face is what he's doing. It's a great honor. Yeah, yeah. We'll give it to you. Yeah. And the Republicans will support you, too. I mean, come on. Get out of here. It's all.
Well, you have to look at this, Malcolm. Nancy Pelosi now has a path before her, doesn't she? She can go and ingratiate herself to President Trump.
Well, do you think the Democrats are going to keep her leader, Ava? Do you think they're going to keep her leader?
Here we go. This is going to be really the circus
that we want to watch.
That's okay?
Exactly.
Donald Trump is not really the circus. Right. The circus will be in the House, and it will be Nancy Pelosi, or they will be choosing another speaker. There may be some arguments amongst the Democrats there, you know.
Right. No, that what you just say is actually very accurate. I believe everything you just said is real, and that it is going to be a circus. But Jim, do you think they're going to? I mean, there's a lot of people that have come straight out and said they're not going to support Nancy Pelosi. Do you think she gets the nod here, or do you think there's going to be a wave? Will there be a wave in the House to really offset her and throw her out?
In the coming weeks, that will be the number one big discussion.
Yeah,
we're going to watch Democrats either stand fast and stand by their word that they didn't want her, or we're gonna watch them acquiesce to her because they're gonna be afraid of her if she does get in. That if they didn't support her, they're gonna lose committee positions, and so it's gonna be interesting. I think it's gonna be an internal battle within the House. And again, I have to agree with Ava. It's gonna be a circus. I'm looking forward to see the debate that goes on over the next month or so as they make their decision on whether or not she should be the speaker.
Yeah. I think it is going to be very, very fascinating. What could, Jim, speculate one moment here. I'd like both of you to speculate. What could the GOP have done differently, do you think? Now, you said, opening up here a moment ago, Jim, you thought that you were surprised that they lost the House. So you really thought, and there were a lot of people who thought they might take the House because of the success that Trump, many say, has put out there. What could they have done differently specifically to have kept the House?
That's a great question. I want to discount what you're going to hear in the next couple of days. You're going to hear, well, Trump didn't fare well in his endorsing of a number of people running, and therefore that was a problem. I go back to my earlier position where we had so many House members announce their resignation or that they weren't going to run for re-elections. That was critical because it forced the Republicans to bring in candidates on short notice who were not necessarily vetted or tenured in other positions where they had a record. And so I think that was the critical thing. I think what they probably should have done was, you know, stayed on another 2 years and run and got reelected and ensured Trump gets reelected in 2020. I think that was what they did by doing that. The 40 or so who did that, that was their protest against Donald Trump. They figured, I'll resign and that'll be my way of getting even with Trump being reelected. Stupid. They didn't help their states out. They didn't help their constituents out. They did it because they did it.
Yeah. Perfect. Perfect. You're painting the picture right now, Jim. This is what the Democrats have to be very careful about, okay? They hold power right now. How they use that power mm-hmm. is going to be very important. The optics here are going to be everything. Whether or not they, you know, come after Trump full, you know, tilt and all that, this is going to be watched carefully. And Trump's reaction, I can guarantee you, will be very measured, very well planned, very thought out in advance.
Ava, in a very interesting op-ed on the front of AmericaOutloud.com this morning here from George McClellan, I want to read this to you and have you comment on it, please.
Mm-hmm.
I lay the loss of the House of Representatives at the feet of Speaker Paul Ryan, a hopeless never-Trumper extraordinaire whose lackluster performance for supporting conservative trend in Republican candidates betrayed his desire for retaining a big government, business as usual, anybody but Trump attitude. What do you say about that?
Spot on. Spot on. It's perfect. And it describes Paul Ryan, you know, right to a T. Paul Ryan, you know, in front of President Trump, he always acted like he was very supportive and he was his best friend.
Right.
These are the kind of guys you really have to be careful about.
Well, yeah, because they're backstabbers. They're backstabbers.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
Right.
The worst
exactly.
Kind. Yeah. You'd rather have somebody tell you to your face than to backstab you in the back. And I know Trump believes that as well. Are you going to miss Paul Ryan, Colonel Warshak?
Not at all.
I had to ask. I couldn't resist. I figured you'd say that indeed. But all right, so overall, they're going to increase the Senate. That's going to keep the judges going and the constitutional success of the nation, which is very, very vital, clearly. McConnell has been on a roll. He's bridged a good relationship with McConnell at this point. That's going to all be good for them. Some of the governor races went well, some not so well. Walker has lost in Wisconsin. That's a big deal. There are others as we get ready for 2020. But I think overall, the last couple of seconds we have left here, let me just go to both of you. Colonel, this shapes up to be a very interesting 2020, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, definitely. And as I said earlier, Trump set in pace a path so that he can get reelected. And I think he reassured that as long as he uses the Senate to his advantage, which I believe he will, he'll use it very strategically. He'll get the things done that needs to get done. He will use it to highlight. I guarantee if you think Trump tweeted a lot in the past, he's going to be tweeting a lot more.
Exactly.
And it's all going to be directed at the House. He is going to spotlight, showcase, highlight all the nonsense.
Well, he's got somebody to go after now, so he's got somebody to poke, and that's exactly right. I agree with everything you say there. Ava, the last couple of seconds we have left here, are you happy overall with this midterm, and what do you think about 2020 real quick?
Oh, gosh, yes. I think we did very well. The sky has not fallen. And don't forget, Trump also has the power of the executive order. So don't discount that. Okay. I think going forward, it's really up to the Democrats now in the House.
Okay.
You know, do they want to push real hard on President Trump? Are they going to try to impeach him? Mm-hmm. Because what will happen if they do that? They will become his foil. And he will win 2020 handily.
Which is what Colonel is saying as well. So I think everybody is in agreement with that. Well, again, leadership, you know, sometimes can go to your head, and sometimes it will work very effectively. We'll see what happens here. It's going to be a very interesting couple of years at the very least, friends. So listen, here's what we're going to do now on Viewpoint here. We've got power-packed panels and discussions coming up right next year. Specifically, let's look at some of the races next. How did America vote? And what happened in some of these key areas? And then we're going to battle. We've got an unbelievable discussion at the end I want to discuss with you with a leading economist, an immigration specialist, and political junkies all over the place here, friends. Stay right there as Viewpoint rolls up.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
Okay, friends, back to Viewpoint here, and as we say, this is going to be a midterm election that is historical for a lot of reasons. I mean, the vitriol coming into the election was beyond anything I think we really could anticipate. It was downright hostile for a lot of reasons. But again, we see what's happened here. Americans seem to like this divided government thing. It keeps the whole thing, the checks and balances. As we talked about in front of the show, this is by design. Many people would say this is by design. This is how the framers envisioned it. We'll take that on next. Let's get specifically into how America voted here. And on our panel discussion here with us is going to be Dennis Santiago, Ilana Friedman, and Brian Gold. And I want to start with Brian as we take the country from the East Coast forward. Let me tell you a little bit about Brian. He served in the U.S. Army and U.S. Special Forces for over 3 decades. He now works for the Department of Defense and is the CEO of Applied Solutions Consulting, political analyst, and he is all over this stuff. So, Brian, let's talk about it here. All right. Looking at the East Coast now, with everything that happened from the Northeast down to the state of Florida, what's the biggest surprise to you of the midterms thus far?
Biggest surprise last night was we put a governor in Maryland. And by we, I mean the Republicans put a governor in Maryland. I thought that completely and totally shocked me, considering the direction Maryland has gone over really the last 15 or 20 years. That was my biggest surprise tonight. My biggest disappointment was Scott Taylor in Virginia. I thought Scott had been a phenomenal representative there in District 2 in Virginia, former Navy SEAL veteran, just a really, really good guy out in the community every day. I was really surprised to see him get edged out.
Yeah, he lost. How close was that race, Brian, roughly in Virginia?
Like 3 points. It
exactly.
Wasn't huge, but it wasn't great either. Right. It was enough, and I had to say that really, really disappointed me. And to the point where I hadn't even been watching it most of the night. And same way with the governor's race in Maryland. I didn't even when Maryland came around, I'm like, yeah, okay, that's Elijah Cummings territory. That's not my bag. And when I saw their governor went red, I was like, did I fall asleep? And, you know, what did I miss here? I was pulling the computer up like, what happened? Did he get arrested? So I was right. I was surprised. It was great. But unfortunately, Republicans, as usual, showed their weakness in the ground game. Their ground game at the local level just was not good.
And you think that was a big factor in this, huh?
That was huge. The Democrats led with exactly what we knew they were going to lead with health care. And they were looking to take away the white female vote. And they hit both those targets dead on the head.
You know, Brian, the ground game. Where the Democrats seem to do better is with emotional voting. They're able to tug on the emotional strings of Americans. The Republicans are not really good at that. They really kind of stink at it, actually. But Democrats have that down pat. They know how to go after the emotional voter. And they're actually pros on that, which is probably why they excel in these things, huh?
Oh, well, without a doubt. And that's when I say they led with health care, they don't have a good health care plan. Right. I mean, half of them are voting on Obamacare, and the other half are voting on something the Democrats say they might deliver in the future. Mm-hmm. They were really, especially like Florida. We lost a lot of seats in Florida last night, and a lot of that was because they scared elderly people into thinking the Republicans were going to take away their health care, that their prescription medication was going to go up, their hospital, their doctor premiums were going to go up. It was a scare tactic. It was totally emotionally driven. Because there was no fact, had no platform to run on.
Yeah, do you think that could have been a factor? Because the Republican Party did not do what they promised and repeal entirely Obamacare, just that one specific mandate, and they didn't have any other answers for health care that really got into the mainstream of consciousness. It then became, in the closing moments of the race, it's sort of, they kind of were pegged in the media as being ignorant to the needs of health care of the everyday American. And of course, you've got to remember, Brian, the media picked up on that, because the media was obviously, they're not supporting Republican candidates, so they really did not support that narrative, you know?
Well, the media does not support Republicans on anything, but the Republicans also make it easy when it comes to things like health care. We, as the Republican Party, we whined and complained when Obamacare got approved, mm-hmm. yet for 5 years, exactly. we sat on our rear ends and did nothing. There is no excuse for the day that Donald Trump took over as president, we did not hand him a Republican-sponsored health care bill. There is absolutely not one excuse Republicans can come up with that. And that has become the disappointment
that's
of both
the
House.
That's a great point. Had they done that, Brian, do you think that that would have made a difference in this election? Could they have retained the House then? Is that the deciding factor?
Oh, I think we would have crushed the House. I think we would have done more than just take it. I think we would have had a mass majority, and I think we'd also had a supermajority in the Senate as well. With just a health care plan on the table that was already approved and was working, mm-hmm. we would have had a huge, huge change last night.
Right.
And it would all have been Republicans.
Brian, let me ask you one other thing here before we move over in the nation here. I want to talk about Florida for a moment in this hot, hot governor race that DeSantis barely eked out, I mean, over Gillum. That was probably the most watched race in the nation. People all over the place. I know people from California all over and throughout the West were watching that governor's race in Florida. As well, Scott, I mean, these were like a percentage of a point, less than that. They were minuscule. 50, 60,000 points separated them, like a half a point or so. And Rick Scott pulled off the senator seat, went from governor to senator. But they almost lost that and lost the entire state of Florida. Why is Florida so divided that way, where they almost put a socialist-type Bernie Sanders candidate in Tallahassee?
Well, there's two big reasons. One, again, the Democrats, I think they outspent DeSantis almost 4-1. Mm-hmm. And they used that money for scare tactics. Now, there was a second thing that really helped Gillum a lot that DeSantis did not capitalize on, and that was another option that was on the ballot, and that was allowing the felons to vote once their time served in Florida, which was something the Supreme Court came up with as a decision for the states. That was on the ballot, and Gillum capitalized on that with a really large incarceration rate of Hispanics and African-Americans in Florida that really resonated home. Because there is no reason whatsoever that a self-proclaimed socialist under investigation, mm-hmm. running on a platform, I'm going to raise your taxes, should even have been competitive in Florida.
It blew my mind. It really blew my mind. That was, to me, unbelievable. Yeah. You know,
and it really came down to the Democrats really scared the elderly and the prescription med things.
Yeah.
And that thing on the ballot. Gillen capitalized on the felons in the ballot.
I mean, it's mind blowing. Brian, it's absolutely mind blowing. I mean, that race, that governor's race in Florida should have been won by 20 points.
Oh, without a doubt. DeSantis is so much better of a politician, regardless of his party. And Gillum is a crook, is everything we hate in a politician. He's a crooked criminal, just terrible person in the office. How he even stayed in mayor's office without being in jail, we're not sure yet.
But again, they eked out a victory, and they eked it out, though, slightly. And there should be a lot of lessons there for the GOP in Florida and even in Georgia, which is still being contested back and forth. Let's move over, and let me bring on Ilana Friedman. Ilana Friedman is a political analyst and a terrorism intelligence analyst as well. She focuses on politics and terrorism both. And Ilana, let's dive into it here, man. What was, as you look at the center part of our country, this was the deciding factor for Trump. Trump, actually, without a lot of the key races where you're looking at, there's no way they would have had the success of the evening. There were a lot of surprises in there as well. What's the biggest aha moment for you of the midterm election coming from the center part of the country?
Well, there were a bunch of really interesting races from Texas to Minnesota, but I think the one of the key races is one of the states that the media really didn't pay too much attention to, but it's the first state, it's Iowa. And the reason that it is significant is that Iowa has four congressional districts. One of them was held by a Democrat, and three were held by Republicans. In yesterday's election, two of the Republican candidates lost their seats. So instead of having 3-1 on the Republican side, Iowa now has 3-1 on the Democrat side. Another one of those races was between Representative David Young and Cindy Axne. Mm-hmm. This was considered one of the tightest races in the country. And Cindy Axne won by 49% to Young's 47.5%.
Ilana, what was the biggest factor in that race? Was it, again, back to what we were talking about earlier with Brian, with the emotional vote and the health care factor, the economy, immigration? What do you think the biggest factor for Iowa was?
I don't think it was so much on issues as it was on personality on that particular race.
Okay.
Cindy Axne is a very charming person, and David Young is kind of plain vanilla. In this case, the big race for the state was the governor's race. And the governor has a wonderful personality. She had, in fact, some of the same things going for her that Cindy Axne had. She's a woman. But she also has done a pretty good job since she took over the role of governor from our former governor, who became the ambassador to China.
Right.
So she became the first woman governor of Iowa.
Yeah, I've seen that. That is interesting. In fact, women did really well last night, Ilana, overall. They more women in the House and all of that, right? I mean, they did really well.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah. Talk to me about the governor's race in Wisconsin, Governor Walker. What happened there?
Okay, well, Walker lost. Mm-hmm. And it's an interesting race because he has run a number of races, including special elections, where he has been under extreme fire and has won. But this time, he actually lost by 31,000 votes. He was running against Tony Evers.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing about this is that he was responsible for a law that was passed after the last election in Wisconsin that says that you can only challenge the results of an election if the margin of loss is less than 1%. And his margin of loss was actually 2%. That would normally exclude the possibility of his challenge to the outcome. However, in Wisconsin yesterday, thousands of ballots were damaged and had to be recreated. So on that basis, depending on the outcome of what happens with these ballots, Walker may actually be able to request a recount. We'll have to wait.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of recounts actually in the next few days. In fact, there's recounts going on in Florida as well with the governor's race and the Senate race because they're within the margin of error, like the mandatory margin, like 0.5%. So there's going to be recounts all over the place. Georgia, another one, recounts. Listen, real quickly, Ted Cruz, he pulled out Texas over Beto O'Rourke and all the money that was thrown in Texas, huh?
Yeah, he did, and it was another one that was very close to the wire.
Mm-hmm.
Ted Cruz got 50.9%.
another close race. And then, of course, you have the first openly gay governor in Colorado. You see that as well.
Yes. Well, we had a number of records yesterday. I mentioned the first woman governor in Iowa, the first openly gay governor in Colorado.
Mm-hmm. Let's move further to the coast there, and I want to bring on Dennis Santiago. Dennis is a global risk and financial analyst, and he focuses on a lot of these political situations going on here. Dennis, let's talk about what's happening on the West Coast. One thing for sure is California is always predictable, huh?
I think I have the most boring part of the country from an election report perspective, in that, you know, this pretty much California, Oregon, Washington, the margins of win for it's not really a blue wave. It's more like a blue lake out here at this point. And margins of winning of 2-1, 3-1 over in competitive races is kind of become the norm out here. And so definitely, Malcolm, this place is amazingly predictable. You know, the people went for the establishment candidate was the Senate race between Dianne Feinstein and Kevin DeLeon. And, Feinstein took it.
She won handily. Yeah.
Handily.
Yeah.
And this is with the DNC or just California State.
Not really supporting her, did they?
No, but they actually endorsed the other guy.
That's amazing. I wonder if she's going to get even now, or what she's going to do exactly. You know,
don't know. It's kind of interesting because from the point of view of the landscape, DeLeon was the rising star for the DNC, mm-hmm. and they wanted him because he brought the Hispanic vote big mm-hmm. time.
Yeah,
and by the way, what's interesting about that is that he's now pretty much completely out of politics for a while because you know that was the end. And the guy that became governor of California last night is the two of them are blood enemies. So Gavin Newsom and DeLeon never get along.
Well, hopefully they'll self-destruct then. They'll blow each other up. Maybe, who knows?
Nah, I don't think so. California is about as blue as it gets.
There's no doubt about that. Listen, what about Mitt Romney in Utah? He's now Senator Romney.
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm.
I guess. I understand from the conservative world, it'll be a voice in the Senate that mm-hmm. will be, I think, a fairly loud one. Because the man is he's pretty well spoken and has his opinions, and it'll make the next 2 years, I think, kind of interesting in that chamber.
Romney could almost run as a Democrat, you know that? I mean, he could almost switch colors and be just fine, you know, right?
Well, yeah, he's from that triangulating in the middle stripe.
From Massachusetts. I mean, he's a Massachusetts governor. So, I mean, that should tell you everything.
But the fact of the matter is, you know, like there is a place in this country for middle ground triangulators, and you know, and they got a voice again, and he's probably going to be the figurehead for that particular side of things.
Yeah.
You know, the last triangulator was Bill Clinton, right? You know, so is Mitt Romney gonna take the mantle? It could very well mean that if he turns out to be mm-hmm. that middle ground, what does the Clinton camp have to fight with going into the 2020 election? You got to look at the positives of this kind of stuff, right?
Well, also McSally in Arizona. Now, do you think she holds on?
Oh, God, that race is tight. It's like 49-49, you know, and points, right? So, like, right now, it'll probably hold. But the thing that I really saw in that one is how tight it is and how close Arizona is, you know, to no longer being a reliable red state. It's basically starting to get tinges of blue, particularly in the urban counties of Arizona.
All right, so here's the thing. My message to everybody is be careful what you wish for, right? Because it could come true. And America likes this divided government thing. It keeps one party in check over the other. I don't know. I sometimes wonder, but it is how we operate here. It is what the framers envisioned, and it's how this thing plays out, friends. So it keeps it all very interesting, for sure. So listen, there were several factors in this race here. You heard a lot about immigration. You heard a lot about the economy, or should you have heard more about the economy? And then, of course, the Democrats went to health care. They're tried and true to put that out there. Where were these factors in there? We have a most interesting conversation coming up right now with a world economist, a brilliant expert in immigration. All coming up next, friends, on Viewpoint.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
Well, the Out Loud perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out loud life on americaoutloud.com. Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. You've got the economy, immigration, and you've got healthcare on the other side of that. Let's bring on and have a conversation here with Dr. Steven Steinle. He's a senior policy analyst at the Center for Immigration Studies in Washington, D.C. He's one of the nation's leading authorities on immigration trends, policies, and the politics behind it all. Joining us as well, Harry Dent. Great to have both of these guys on. Harry is an economic forecaster and New York Times bestselling author. His latest book, Zero Hour, turn the greatest political and financial upheaval in modern history to your advantage. And I can tell you now where the economy is headed over the next couple of years, Harry will be a regular voice we'll be hearing from time to time, as well as Dr. Steinle will, because immigration and the economy are two things that are not going away. I got news for you. Harry, I want to start with you. Was the president right to focus on immigration, the caravan, what's happening at the border, all of that, which, you know, they have never gotten immigration right. I mean, this is a problem that's been decades in the making. Or should he have focused on the economy? A lot of people have come out and said, well, you focus on what's hot for you, and he didn't really pay attention to the economy like he should have. What do you think?
Well, you know, the exit polls just before said healthcare was the number one concern, 44%, the economy 23%, and immigration was third at 21%, and guns was 5%. So I think he would have done better to focus more on the economy. On the other hand, There's no question that this was at least a mild victory for him, because it was expected the Democrats would take over the House. And I said to my subscribers on Money for the Election, look, this is real simple. The markets would want to see gridlock. They'd want to see the Democrats kind of counteract the Republicans here, but not with the gravy train they've had with deregulation and especially tax cuts. They want Republican strength here. So the markets voted yes, up 200 points. Not great. I mean, if it had been a knockout victory for the Republicans, if they'd have kept the House or something or neutral and gained in the Senate like they did, then the markets would have been 500 points. But still, it's saying, look, this was a minor victory. So you can't say he did the wrong thing. It obviously worked. I think he would have done better because, you know, I've got the economic statistics in front of me. The economy has done substantially better. It is the strong suit, and it was the second biggest preference or topic for people in these exit polls.
Might have done better had he stayed on the economy. But Harry, the other factor you just mentioned a moment ago, which you said was the biggest thing that people were concerned with, was healthcare, right? Healthcare?
And you know, the Democrats hit that, and it must not have worked that well, because they did make that an issue. And it's another sign, higher voter turnout than average, and them focusing on the number one topic by the exit polls, would have thought the Democrats would have done better. So again, whatever happened here, the Democrats, and I even said this to our subscribers, I said, I'll tell you my leaning. I think the Republicans are going to do a little less worse. They're expected to lose some seats, of course. They're going to do a little less worse than expected because the Democrats just, you know, the Republicans just fight stronger, you know, and the Democrats don't. They're kind of like too nice. Even Bill Maher, their big proponent, says that Democrats are wimps. So I think that's what happened. I don't think they had strong enough candidates or a strong enough overall position.
Okay. Dr. Steinle, so could the president have done better by focusing on the economy, in your opinion, or did he make the right move and make immigration the big ticket item?
No, I think he made a mistake. The economic achievements of the administration are extremely impressive. And it's rather funny to see that one of the things the Democrats want to do, you know, is a big infrastructure program Now when we have unemployment down to 3.2%, you know, it's like, I'm not saying infrastructure is great, but employment is in excellent shape. Wages are actually rising. And I think by choosing immigration, important as the subject is, it's also one of the most divisive issues in the country.
Yeah.
Voters themselves are divided. They look at immigration in their heads, and they really agree with the president. So we had an amazing poll that Capps at Harvard did along with Harris, saying 76% of the Americans want immigration cut in half. They want more border protection. But they also look at it with their hearts, and they don't like things that seem too tough. And so with the president, you know, one of his great weaknesses, actually, of course, is, you know, the rancorous personality charge against him, mm-hmm. that he's too tough. In immigration, he comes across as, you know, way too tough. So when he's sending, you know, the more thousands of troops he sends to the border, people are uncomfortable. Or the dividing of the families, by the way, which he had, in some sense, no choice but to do, given the nature of the laws right now. But it's not a strong suit for him in terms of winning the people he needs, which is to say, and that's one of the big problems, he has not worked to expand his base. You know, he needs those suburban people. He needs people who are more moderate, and he didn't get them.
The evening started off where we all kind of felt, many of us felt, that the blue wave would probably hit a red wall. And that's exactly what happened. There was really no big blue wave, as you were saying, Harry, as well. But there was a red wall that stayed tried and true. And a lot of these races the president went out to campaign for, he was victorious in. Many of the senators, they're going to pick up probably 4 or 5, maybe even 6 senator seats before it's all done and counted. And a lot of those are people he put it all on the line. So, Harry, basically, if you listen to Dr. Steinlight there, and I think everybody agrees that he probably would have been better to lead with the economy. But again, the president is very divisive. And you and I have spoke about that, Harry, before. And a lot of people get turned off by that. And then, as Stephen says, they're sending troops down to the border and all of that. So there's this mindset that's been painted now. You see, one thing the Democrats are really good at, Harry, is they're really good at tugging at the emotional strings of Americans, the everyday American. The Republicans don't do as well with that. Back to health care. They pushed health care. Now, what I will say to you is, had the Democrats not focused on health care as much, I don't think they would have done as well in the House, Harry.
Right. I agree with that. Again, that just the exit polls confirmed that they were touting the right message, and they still didn't do that well. So I agree. They would have done even worse if they hadn't had that one clear focus. I think the thing you see, I mean, I don't even think the Republicans have a lot of leadership. Trump basically took over the party. The Democrats don't really have much leadership. People do not like Nancy Pelosi. Obama actually did as good a job as you could have done, coming from the past, and very well thought out speech, and a big contrast to Trump. But again, where is the energy? The reason Trump won in the first place, and I don't agree with half the stuff he does. I agree with half of it and don't agree with the other half. But what he did was seize on where the energy and anger is, and it is in that 20-30% of the population, kind of the silent majority or minority that has not been making progress in the last few decades in a globalization world, and does see, I mean, all immigrants, and foreign workers in China and stuff. I always say, hey, my view is, I think workers here are competing with foreign workers in Asia and other countries, whether they're here or not. Better to have qualified people here that at least pay taxes and contribute to the economy, because they're going to compete with you anyway. If somebody can outsource to China or India or Vietnam or Mexico anyway, then you're still competing with these people. We just need to be an immigration system that is selective. Like Canada, Australia have wildly successful systems, and we just let people run across the border. I think we need immigrants, but we need to be intelligent about it.
No, you're exactly right.
I mean, I agree. We are essentially outsourcing on our own soil.
Yes, that's better than outsourcing on somebody else's soil.
I mean, I agree with the overall point, and that is, you know, immigration is good when we start moving toward meritocratic criteria. And we bring people in who can, you know, contribute to a post-industrial, knowledge-based, high-tech society. I mean, the problem with the immigrants, as we know, is, you know, not that these immigrants are in any way demonstrably different than the immigrants say, when my father came or people's grandfathers came, the difference is America. You know, we are no longer a manufacturing society with lots of jobs that provide upward movement. That escalator is broken. And so we're bringing in, you know, tons, millions and millions of people, the greatest numbers in our history, into an economy that can't accommodate them. And we are certainly bankrupting our social safety net by the same token that we're not in a situation to give them upward mobility, and we're creating a permanent underclass. That's the great worry, I think.
All right, Harry, let's take a look right now. As we sit here right now, and now we see, you know, again, the next big metric is going to be 2020. The House now is going to be Democratic run. It's going to be divided government. We're going to have, you know, again, it's going to be come to gridlock. Gridlock is going to be the story over the next couple of years. First of all, do you think there's any chance they'll work together on some of these big issues of the day, or is that a real long shot? And number two, how does this set up for 2020? And let's keep in mind the big elephant in the room, Harry Dent, and that's going to be the economy.
It is. You know, the Republicans have gotten over a hurdle here, you know, is good or better than expected. I don't see them working together that much on most issues. That we are the most, that's the zero hour. The whole book was about that. We're the most polarized political system since the Civil War, much more than the Depression or any other crisis in our history. So mm-hmm. I don't expect that. The big hurdle, and this is huge, you know, Malcolm, what I think. I do not think any president, Superman, Trump, or anybody can get through 2020 without this big, bad, fat, ugly bubble, which he acknowledged when he was running, bursting. I think it may be bursting now. I think it's more likely to burst around late next year, and we're going to have kind of a repeat on some very important cycles I have up to kind of 29 to 32 bursts. No president, I don't care who you are, you get a major downturn towards the end of your term, you are DOA. I think the Republicans got taken over by Trump. That's why they're not unified and not really together as they could be. He took over the party and did it very successfully. And I think that they have made compromise. This deficit is going to kill them. This tax cut is my number one bad, bad, bad idea. At the end of a long bubble, when corporate profits are the highest they've ever been as a percentage of GDP, and income inequality is as high as it was in 1929, to pass a tax cut for the top 1 to 10% and take our government deficit from 2.9% to 12.5% of GDP and rising is lunacy, and they're going to look like idiots when this $1.2 trillion deficit turns in a downturn into $2.5 trillion, and if the economy collapses after all this stimulus and tax cuts, there's no way a sitting president collapsed that. George H.W. Bush was reasonably popular and had a very minor recession in the second half of his term, and he could not win.
No, yeah.
Imagine you're being Herbert Hoover, okay, and the next Great Depression comes in on your watch.
Well, the deficit's going to be the next big conversation I think we're going to have in this country, clearly, and nobody's been really talking about that. Dr. Stone, I want you to pick up where Harry just laid out there. What he just said is not going to be very popular to the conservative movement, keep in mind. Again, Harry doesn't really play partisan politics much. So he just kind of tells you the way it is and kind of pisses a lot of people off. But I want you to pick up on what Harry says right there. Because I know that, Stephen, because I get a lot of listeners in response when Harry's on, and they either love him or hate him. I want you to pick up on that, Stephen, and pick up on what Harry just said. You agree with any of that? You disagree with that? Full of hearty, I'd like to, what, talk to me.
No, I mean, it seems to me that when you're running up into a deficit that is so stratospheric, you're going to pay the piper at some point, and it's going to come probably toward the end of this presidency. I don't disagree with a thing that he's saying. And Trump is, as you said, I mean, Trump has taken over the Republican Party. In essence, there is Trump, and then there's the Republican Party, and then there's a small number of people, you know, say the Freedom Caucus, that basically, you know, are his loyal and trustworthy folks. But yeah, I mean, it's what's very, very worrying, of course, is that I have no confidence in the leadership of either party to manage what's ahead.
Yeah, well, that's been the problem, Stephen. That's been the entire problem right there. You got two spoiled kids in the room. What the hell do you expect, right? I mean, they want what they want, and that's about it. They don't really want to sit and solve the big problems. Stephen, do you think with everything we just said, with the economy, the factor of health care, the divided government, take a shot. Do you think 2020, do you think Trump gets reelected, or does the economy fall before then, and is he out?
Well, obviously, you know, it's a $64 question. If the economy falls, of course he's out. He may be out even without the economy falling. I mean, if you look at the some of the divides that are actually quite fascinating, the gender thing is can't be denied. I mean, we have 100 women elected into the House now.
That's right.
The Republicans may well run, despite Needy's forecast, the Republicans may choose a woman. You never know. But they may choose one of those nice suburbanite women and run with her. And Trump is, you know, Trump is terrible on gender. He's terrible on deportment. He's, I mean, we know what he's really bad on. You know, personality, a cultural style. And that is, you know, that, by the way, even those people who buy the notion that the economy is you know, here to stay, and it's, everything's magnificent and wonderful. If this election proved anything, it's not, you know, the economy is stupid, at least the economy, the apparent situation of the economy. You know, if you really don't like a president, you really don't like a president, because you think he's creating storm and drong and chaos and unpredictability, which a lot of people feel, the economy is not, not the only or number one issue.
Yeah, Stephen, that is well said, man. That is well said what you say there, I have to tell you. Not that we want to hear that, but it is the truth. Harry, I hear what you guys are saying, but let me say this last thought to you, Harry. Donald Trump is very strategic in nature. You have to admit he's one of the most brilliant strategists we've seen, which is why he is in the position he is, and it is why he just got more senators and is still, I mean, this is the first time in 105 years the president in office has gained in the Senate. That hasn't happened in 105 years, Harry. I mean, so a lot of people are saying that's magic. That's Trump magic. He's very strategic in nature. People think he knows what he's doing. Could there still be a magic or two that he plays out here in the next 2 years?
Malcolm, what about Superman couldn't survive this that was not clear? It doesn't matter. My view before the election in late 2016, I said my advice, and my father was a political consultant who got Nixon elected by carrying the All-Star Wrestling fans, by the way, the same thing Trump did. So I know, I understand the brilliance of it. It's not Homer Simpson. It is the extremes that are the swing vote, and that's what he did. But you just can't. My thing was, whoever gets elected in 2016, I don't care who it is, Democrat, Republican, Hillary, Trump, whoever, the odds of getting through 2020 without at least a recession, because we've had that every 10 years, give or take, and we're over that boundary now, and especially in a bubble of this magnitude, the odds of keeping this going up, I think he would get reelected, because there is no other great candidate or strong leader. If he could keep the economy at this level into late 2020, I give that a 10% chance, Malcolm. So I give him a 10% chance of getting reelected. I don't care how.
Well, that is a very, both of you gentlemen, very, very interesting analysis, I have to tell you. Thanks for opening up my email box. We'll get all kinds of response from this segment. Big, big thank you here to Dr. Stephen Steinlight, economist Harry Dent. What a great conversation. A very interesting analysis. Again, friends, it's not that you're going to agree or disagree with everything, but at least you're getting a reality of what is really happening out there, the way people, experts in their field, believe, and that's what's most important. Friends, you'll see it all back at AmericaOutloud.com. We are humming along here as we continue on to the election coverage and all. You can email us at talk@AmericaOutloud.com. Friends, we will always deliver an honest analysis and opinions on all sides of the political aisle. We don't discriminate against an opinion. The main thing is we are always in search of the out loud truth.